And now, it's Boomer Life, lifestyle discussion designed to make your life more engaging, meaningful, and complete. Celebrating the baby boomer generation, this is Boomer Life on CIL 650.
It's not unusual you want to be loved by anyone.
And welcome to Boomer Life on CIL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, and today, April 11th, 2017, is World Parkinson's Day. Now, for the next hour, we're going to be talking about this, what the disease is, how it can affect you and members of our community, and we'll also be joined by some expert guests from the Parkinson's Society of BC to help inform and educate. With me in the studio right now, we'll say hello to CEO of the Parkinson's Society of BC. This is Jean Blank. Jean, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Joanne.
So before we get into a little bit about your background, what does it mean, World Parkinson's Day?
Well, we do an awareness campaign every year focused around this day. This year in particular is really important because it's the 200th anniversary of the disease actually being described by Dr. Parkinson's. I think what we're trying to do is make people more aware about some of the myths and misunderstandings about the disease, who it affects. It can affect anyone. We're seeing, unfortunately, younger and younger cases being diagnosed. And I think also information about living well with the disease.
Today is World Parkinson's Day. So Jean Blank is a very experienced leader in nonprofit, private industry, healthcare, and education. You're a former CEO of the Alzheimer's Society of BC and a former executive director of the Canadian Diabetes Association, the Pacific region. So Jean also has an extensive background in organizational development, training, and leadership in all levels of government, healthcare, and education. So Jean, it's a pleasure to have you here. Whatever led you to the Parkinson's Society of BC? How did you end up here?
Well, I think I've been working with disease-based nonprofits for a few years now, and it's just an extension of an opportunity to provide some leadership for a disease that really is somewhat unknown, and we need to build more awareness about it and work towards finding a cure.
So tell us a little bit about the society, how it became, and it's been in British Columbia for some time now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's almost 50 years old. Basically, a group of well-meaning individuals, care partners, and clinicians started it with the idea that people living with the disease could be better supported and educated about how to better manage their symptoms. And so that's largely the work of us today. We have a very small staff, about 10 of us. We are provincial, and we have 50 volunteer-led support groups across British Columbia. So we work hard with our volunteers to provide education and support to people living with the disease and their families and care partners.
So you have a main center here in Vancouver. How do you get your message out throughout the province?
Well, of course, now with technology, it's a lot easier. For example, we started a new service, counseling, short-term counseling, about 2 years ago, and you don't have to be in Vancouver to take advantage of that. You can do it by Skype or phone or some support aspects, even through email. So we use technology, so our website is one of the main ways that we get messaging out, but this being April Parkinson's Awareness Month, we also have invested into a transit campaign. So here in Vancouver, at the waterfront station, people will walk out and see a large mural. We also have ads on 100 buses across the city, also in Victoria, Prince George, and Kelowna.
It's a great way to get the message out. It's actually a good time for me to also mention your website, which is parkinson.bc.ca, and you can find out more information there, of course. So tell us a little bit more about the campaign that you've launched for World Parkinson Day. It's you've titled it, This is Parkinson's Disease, and what does that mean? What picture are you trying to paint here?
Well, I think there's been a traditional understanding that it's a disease of the older person, and yes, the number one risk factor is still aging. However, we are seeing it in many young people as well. You see one young woman, her parents started seeing some issues when she was 14, and she was actually then formally diagnosed in her 20s. And now she's on the wait list for a surgical intervention called deep brain stimulation. You'll see Richard, who you're going to talk to later on in the show. He's late 40s, I believe, and so he was diagnosed a number of years ago. And then there is a couple. They are older. They're in their 70s. They were both diagnosed with the disease within years of one another. So we're really trying to show that it doesn't discriminate. It can unfortunately hit anybody at any age.
So your campaign, your basic goal is to help reshape how we think about the disease. It's not just an old person's disease. It's you and me.
That's right. And I think the other issue is that people can live well with it for a long time. Yes, it is a progressive disease, but there are things that people can do to better manage the symptoms and to have as good a quality of life for as long as possible.
So what are some of the main issues that are facing the Parkinson community right now in British Columbia? What sort of projects are you working on right now?
Well, I think probably it's access to even getting a diagnosis. It is a very complex disease, and though general practitioners and even community neurologists often can diagnose it for the best treatment, it's we advise that people do see a movement disorder specialist, and there are very few of those in the province. A few located at the Pacific Parkinson's Research Center. You're going to talk to its director later on. And there's an outpatient clinic at Surrey, Jim Pattison's outpatient center, and also a half-day clinic in Kelowna. But that doesn't make very easy access. So our folks often have to wait as long as 2 to 3 years before they can get in to see a specialist.
Oh, my, that's so unfortunate in this system. Do you have any numbers of what percentage of the population has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease here in British Columbia?
The 2014-15 statistics from the BC Ministry of Health tell us just over 13,000.
Is that significant? Is this something that's significantly increasing over the years?
Yes, it is, because our earlier numbers were about 3 years previous to that, and they were saying a little over 8,000 at that time. So we are seeing an increase. And again, aging being the number one risk factor, that's probably largely where it's coming from, although we are hopefully also getting better at diagnosing the disease.
Can you tell us a little bit about fundraising efforts with the Parkinson Society of BC, or what types of things do you do to encourage contributions to your society?
Sure. Well, pretty much all of our money comes from individual donations. We do have some wonderful events that happen during the year, and that's how people contribute. But a lot of it is just people feeling that they've either got a good service from us through attending one of our education events or getting resources from us. And so the philanthropic aspect of individuals kicks in.
Super. Is there anything you wanted to add about some of the guests that are on today's show? Dr. Martin McKeown, he's going to be in later today.
Yeah. Well, we're very, very privileged to have him as part of the team. He's got extensive background, which I'm sure you'll talk about a little bit with him. For me, I've got a bit of history with him because when I worked for Alzheimer's, I didn't know him at that time, but he was instrumental in linking an engineer at Simon Fraser University with a clinical researcher at UBC, and they did a very innovative brain mapping research project, which was helpful to be able to diagnose Alzheimer's, but also to be able to track the progress to some degree. And Dr. McKeown's got an engineering background as well as a medical background, and he was the link.
Oh, he'll be fascinating to talk to. And Richard Maede is going to be here, and you know Richard, don't you?
Well, Richard, of course, we're very fortunate to have on our board of governors. We have
He's also your poster boy.
Yes, and he lent his image and story to our current April awareness campaign, and he's worked really hard to manage his disease, not only with the appropriate medications, but through the use of exercise.
Oh, he'll be fun. And our final guest on today's show is going to be, is it Dr. Laura, is it Mishley?
Yes, yeah, and she's from the U.S. We were fortunate to connect with her in September of 2016. There's a World Congress on Parkinson's, it happens every 3 years, and we were there, and so was she. We have been unable to find a nutritionist dietitian in British Columbia that has her expertise about Parkinson's disease, and so We actually brought her up for a conference last fall here in Victoria, and she has delivered information about diet and nutrition that is quite new to our community. And you'll hear how there is now, from research, we can see that there is a relationship between the gut and Parkinson's disease. And so what she has to say about nutrition is really of value to our community.
Yeah, we certainly look forward to that portion of the show as well. You're listening to Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton, and April is Parkinson Awareness Month. Today, we're joined in studio with the CEO of the Parkinson Society of BC. Jean Blake is here, and you can always get more information online at parkinson.bc.ca. And many of you may be more aware of Parkinson disease with the likes of celebrities like Michael J. Fox, who went public with his diagnosis. But we're about to meet a 49-year-old man from Vancouver who lives with Parkinson's disease. We'll get a first-hand account of Richard's lifestyle when we come back. This is Boomer Life on CL 650.
Celebrating the baby boomer lifestyle. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. We're back. This is Boomer Life on CL 650.
Welcome back. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, and today being marked as World Parkinson's Day. We're joined in studio with British Columbia's Parkinson Society CEO, Jean Blake, is here. And also, we have a new guest now. Joining us is Richard Mayday. Richard, thanks for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Now, I understand you're 49 years old.
Well, technically, I'm still 48, to be turning 49 next month.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't want to rush it for you. Yeah. You're from Vancouver.
Yes.
And you also serve on the Parkinson Society BC's Board of Directors.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yes, yes.
So like many others in the Parkinson community, Richard has committed himself to staying active in order to combat some of the symptoms and the progress of the disease. Rather than exercise at a gym, he prefers to play a variety of sports to help maintain his quality of life. You're a digital designer, is
yes,
that correct?
That's so you, correct.
Do you still work full-time?
Yeah, well, I try to. It has become a bit more of a challenge with the illness, but yeah.
And I also understand that your upbringing and your values rooted in Buddhism have helped you believe in the power of positivity.
Yes, very much so.
Okay, so we're all on the same page here. I want to hear a little bit more about your story.
Okay.
Tell us about when you were first diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Take us back to that time.
Okay, it would have been back 2005, so I was turning 37, and a friend of mine noticed that my hand was quite shaky, and I thought that, well, I just attributed it to coffee, right? And my friend kept on persisting that I should see a doctor. And so being a typical guy, I just resisted. But her persistence really helped me to actually see a doctor, right? So I saw my family doctor, and that part took a while because he just said, well, come back next week, come back 1 week. So that actually started getting frustrating for me. So I finally got him to get me to see a neurologist, and neurologist thought I was quite young, so she suggested that go to the Pacific Parks Institute at UBC and get a second opinion. And so then it was actually Dr. McHugh, your guest that's following up, that said that I have Parkinson's. So I kind of prepared myself before that, because the fact that the initial neurologist said that I have Parkinson's helped me to actually be prepared to hear it again. So yeah, when I initially heard it, it wasn't so much of a shock. It was actually the best out of all the bad situations it could be, right? So I thought, well, if it's going to be Parkinson's, then I'd rather have it be Parkinson's than like some kind of brain tumor or something.
Did you know anything about Parkinson's disease? Did you, you say you weren't too shocked, but did you really know what this was going to mean for you in your life?
No, not really, but like having been a fan of like the Back to the Future movies, and so I knew of Michael J. Fox and his challenge to bring awareness to this in the U.S., right, in Canada. But again, having gone through it now, like it's actually much more challenging than I thought it would be. But again, it's something that I prepared myself for.
So what are some of the other changes that you've noticed in your body that made you think something's just not right, besides the little tremor in your hand?
Well, for me, like, the change that bothers me the most, actually, my voice, it's become much more stuttered, and that's been a challenge. But overall, there is also stiffness that comes into play, and that is also a challenge for many people with Parkinson's, because you're not used to being trapped in your own body, right? So, yeah.
So has it caused any other limitations? Are there things that you feel you just can't do like you used to do?
Well, I think I can't run as fast as I used to, but I think that's just because of age.
But you can still
yeah.
run.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, whenever I can, I'm running, I'm sprinting, so, yeah.
So let's talk about the importance of exercise and physical activity and how that's helped you and what you choose to do to be active to help combat some of your symptoms.
Well, for me, sports is really a fun way to get exercise without actually having to thinking that you're exercising. So I've played hockey, soccer, I do jogging regularly, biking, play tennis, and so things that keep me moving in a way that I'm not thinking about, I have to work out for half an hour to get my half hour exercise in daily. That works for me. What works for someone else will be different, right? So I think you really got to tailor exercise to what you like, and for those who don't like to exercise, still got to find something to do, because definitely, for me, keeping my body moving has slowed the progression of this disease, because I mean, it's 12 years now since my initial diagnosis, right? And so, despite a little bit of dyskinesia that's happening, I think I'm doing quite well.
What's dyskinesia?
Well, that's actually the movement that you're seeing of when the medication is actually working, it's causing involuntary movements in my body. And so, that's just the side effect of the medication, right? So I always thought before I had this illness is that's because of Parkinson's, but no, it's the medication that's causing this involuntary movement.
And the involuntary movements could be a little bit of twitching, or it almost looks like a muscle reaction, you know, with your arm waving when you're really not telling your arm to mm-hmm. wave, or your head moving to one side, things like that.
Yeah, for me, what I thought today was that I was actually nauseous in the morning. I thought, it's because I'm swaying side to side. And I thought, well, my dad was a fisherman. And so I thought, well, I never got his sea legs. So I thought, well, that's probably why I'm feeling nauseous, because I'm getting a bit of seasickness from just rocking back and forth. So
from the movement.
Yeah.
And so what types of medications do you take to help manage, as well as the exercise that you do?
Well, besides the prescribed medication, I don't take any other kind of supplements, so I'm pretty much stuck to what my doctor has told me to take on a regular basis, and it really is important that you take them as prescribed, because I think what happens with people that they might tend to actually take it a little bit too early, because they're worried about their symptoms showing or something, but the fact that I've stuck to a schedule of taking the medication once every 2.5 hours, for me that's worked, and for others it'll be different, right? Initially it'll be maybe once every half a day to as it progresses, the time between medications will actually shorten. So, yeah.
Well, I think you're a true inspiration, and I can see why the Parkinson's Society of BC has chosen you as the poster boy. When does that big poster go up in the city, or is it up right now?
It's up already.
It's up already.
And so are the transit ads.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. How do you feel about being chosen to be the face of World Parkinson Day here in British Columbia?
Well, I don't know if I'm the actual face, but the fact that the other people too, that the younger person with Parkinson, the fact that she had Parkinson, found out she had Parkinson at 14, and the older couple, I think that shows the wide range of how this can touch anybody, right? So for me, it's not so much being the face of World Parkinson Day, but really showing that you can live positively despite having this illness, and live to the best of your abilities, right? So I think that it was actually surprising to me that this young person found out that she had it at 14, right? And so she's actually lived a life that's much more challenging, I think, than I have, because at 14, I was able to do a lot of things and experience a lot of things that most teenagers can. But as thinking about her, like the fact that she may have not been able to play, like, I don't know if she's into sports, but to me that would have been like a huge setback if I couldn't play sports again, right? So so to me that really shows that, again, like it can affect anybody. And so for me, what's important with the World Parkinson's Day is to really show that that you can live as positively as possible with this illness. Yeah.
You can manage it, yeah. And you've found a way through exercise. And what about the new research that they've done? And we'll be talking to Dr. McKeown about that. Mm-hmm. Is that there's a connection with the food that you eat and your digestive bacteria?
Yes. What I've talked to Dr. McKeown about personally is that what they do know is that a protein can be something that blocks the medication from working. So that is something that is challenging for me because I love my burgers. And so that I've had to switch up my nutrition in a way that is more vegetable based. But I think, again, how you deal with it, it's going to be different for everybody, right? So the fact that I've had to switch actually made me healthier, and that's a good thing. So, yeah.
Probably helped with a lot of your activity as well, because you sound like quite a busy guy. And you still ride a bike today, Richard?
Yes, I had this little incident last year. I actually fell off my bike at a bike park, the bike park underneath the Broad Street Bridge. It's a little bit too challenging for what I'm normally used to, but it actually, I hurt my ribs and...
You went off a jump.
Yeah, and so, again, I don't know if that's something that I should be doing, but definitely it's something that was fun before I got hurt, so, yeah.
Can you tell us, Richard, what would you like people to know about Parkinson's disease that we may not know already?
I think that what they might not know is that it actually takes quite a bit of time to see their specialist. So when I initially got sick 12 years ago, I could see my doctor once every 6 months. And now it's like once every 18 months. So it's that amount of time is too long, especially when the disease progresses, because the fact that it's progressing at a much faster rate, and the time to see your specialist, it's too long in BC. I don't know how it is elsewhere, but I'm lucky that I'm able to. I'm lucky that I got sick in Vancouver, because the Pacific Parkinson's Institute is right here in Vancouver. Right? But people elsewhere outside of Metro Vancouver, they may not have access. The kind of access that I have, so I think maybe up to 2-3 years for some people to actually see.
Mm-hmm. So I think the keynote here is not to wait. And you have your friend. You started off this interview by telling us about your friend that noticed a little tremor in your hand, mm-hmm. and you brushed it off like a typical guy and said, "I don't need to go to the doctor."
Yeah.
But be aware of your body.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for men, women, and their friends, just having that kind of friendship really helps. So listen to your friends, listen to your partner, and really take care of yourself. Yeah.
Richard, thank you very much for sharing your story today. Keep up the great work and all that physical fitness. I don't know where you possibly find time to do it all, but maybe we'll see you on the tennis court someday.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Wonderful contribution. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. Today we're joined in studio with Parkinson's Society BC's CEO Jean Blake, and we've just spoken with Richard Mayede. Thank you so much, Richard, for sharing your story, and thank you for the work that you do on the board of directors for the Parkinson's Society. We didn't even really touch on that. What kind of a commitment is that for you, being on the board?
It's something that I actually sought out, and it's because I just wanted to be more vocal, have a voice that actually would, well, again, just the fact that that they accept me on board, it's been meant a lot. And so to be have this illness and to actually play a role in how it's taken care of in BC, to me was really important. So that's probably why I want to join the board.
It's a great commitment. Thank you very much. And if you want more information about Parkinson's disease, please visit the website, parkinson.bc.ca. And we can't speak to this medical condition without the expertise of a doctor. And that's coming up next on World Parkinson Day on CL 650.
Celebrating the baby boomer lifestyle. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. We're back. This is Boomer Life on CL 650.
And we're back. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. Thanks for joining us today. Here we are in the studio with Parkinson Society BC's CEO, Jean Blake, whom we've spoken to earlier this hour about the work that the Society does and their mission to be the voice of British Columbians who are living with Parkinson disease to ease their burden and to hopefully find a cure. We also heard from Richard Mayede, who spoke of his work on the board of directors for the Society and what it's like to receive a diagnosis of Parkinson disease and what it's like to live with it. Joining us now in the studio is Dr. Martin McKeown. Thanks for being here and joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So there is no doubt, Dr. McKeown, that you are the resident expert for Parkinson disease. Your bio reads like a textbook for physics, neurology, and neurobiology with degrees and masters and professional positions on both sides of the border for Canada and the U.S. Maybe you could tell us what hat you're wearing here with us today, what title that you carry that relates to Parkinson disease right now.
Yes, well, currently I'm the director of the Pacific Parkinson's Research Center at UBC, and the PPRC, as we call it, is an interdisciplinary center that's dedicated towards excellence in research related to Parkinson's and also excellence in clinical care of people living with Parkinson's.
Okay, so Dr. McKeown, can we just cover some of the basics here? What are some of the early signs and symptoms of Parkinson's disease?
Yeah, well, actually, Parkinson's can often creep up on you very slowly. One of the earliest manifestations is actually a loss of smell, and some people don't immediately recognize that. Some people may have constipation, or they may actually act out their dreams even years before ultimately a diagnosis is made. But most of the time, people start to notice things such as a tremor in one hand, or they may be shuffling a little bit more, or perhaps people close to them notice that their face is showing less expression than it did before.
Wow, some of these precursors and symptoms are quite surprising to me. How are they all related, smell and constipation and shuffling?
That's a very good question, and it's because we don't really know where the disease starts. It used to be assumed that the disease started in the brain, which was associated with control of movement, and that's why people presented initially with tremor and shuffling and so on. But now we're starting to think that it's possible the disease may actually start in the gut and may affect other parts of the brain, some of the sort of older primitive centers of the brain associated with smell and so on.
Very interesting. So can you tell us, if you don't know exactly where Parkinson's disease starts, how could it the disease be diagnosed?
Well, that's actually a quite a difficult question, and that's why I think Parkinson's should be diagnosed by a specialist, because it can actually be very difficult to diagnose, specifically because there are many conditions that look like Parkinson's but are not actually Parkinson's. So looking at all these constellation of signs is best interpreted by an expert in the field. And sometimes even the experts get it wrong. And one of the most important features is how well people respond to medication. People with Parkinson's disease, fortunately, tend to respond very well to medication, particularly in the early stages of the disease.
So at what point, if someone has any possible concerns, should they actually go and see a doctor?
I would say as soon as possible. Unfortunately, due to the situations in our province, the wait list can be quite long. But I think it's important to be assessed as soon as possible, because you know, interventions are possible that can possibly slow the progression of the disease, but and certainly treat some of the early symptoms that people may have.
So what types of, I guess, investigations are done to try to help determine that you have Parkinson's disease?
Well,
it's not like a simple blood test.
No, unfortunately not, and that would make things a lot simpler. So there are many things that have been suggested as ways to assess it, but ultimately it boils down to clinical expertise. So a careful examination by an expert, possibly some ancillary tests such as an MRI scan and so on. These are the things that have to be taken together as a cohesive picture to come up with a firm diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a very delicate and very lengthy process.
Well, it's not necessarily lengthy, but I think it requires expertise to make sure that the diagnosis is correct.
So, Dr. McKeown, can we talk a little bit about some of the areas of research that are currently being studied at the Pacific Parkinson's Research Center?
Yes, we have actually a very active research program, including different types of imaging of the brain of Parkinson's. We're looking at some of the genetics associated with Parkinson's. We're looking at ways to use new technologies to monitor disease progression. And we're even looking at sort of novel non-drug therapies. However, our most recent study, which is being headed up by my colleague, Dr. Creswell, is we're actually looking at the microbiota of the gut in Parkinson's. And this is work that's being funded by the Parkinson's Society of Canada and also the Pacific Parkinson's Research Institute.
So what is microbiota?
So it turns out that we actually have trillions of cells that live inside our gut and on our skin. And in fact, we have more of these cells than we actually have human cells. And these are typically things like bacteria and so on that grow in our gut. We normally don't think much about them until they flare up and give us, for example, traveler's diarrhea, and then we become acutely aware of it. But in the past, these cells have mostly been ignored, and what we're discovering now is that they seem to be very important for health. And not only health of the gut, which is, I guess, fairly obvious, but health of the brain. And so there's something that's called the so-called gut-brain axis, where it turns out that the bacteria in the gut may secrete hormones and stuff that influence the brain, and this may be affected in disease.
I'm absolutely amazed that you've made that connection between the brain and the gut. We know in Western medicine that these are two areas that are extremely complicated and also extremely vulnerable, because everybody's composition for every single living person on Earth are completely different. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit more about what you're looking at specifically in this research of the microbiota and how this may help people with Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm. Well, we think this is a particularly important area to investigate for many reasons. First, as we talked about before, it can be quite difficult to come up with a firm diagnosis. And so it's relatively easy to get a stool sample from someone and analyze the gut flora. And that may be one way we can use to track disease progression or use it for diagnostic purposes. But perhaps more excitingly is it raises the potential for treatment. Some preliminary studies have shown that there are certain bacteria that are only seen in people with Parkinson's but are not seen in people who don't have Parkinson's. Now, we're not sure whether or not these particular bacteria species are the cause or the result of the disease, but that's why we want to investigate this further. Because if it turns out there are certain bacteria that are associated with types of illness, it may be possible to target these with either specific antibiotics or types of probiotics, or even changing your nutrition, which I think is going to be a topic later.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's very important. When did you actually make this connection that your gut might have a connection to the disease?
Well, this has been kind of a growing area of research over the last decade or so. It's long been known that the gut had a very complicated flora, but I think it's just the recognition of how important this was to the rest of the body and the brain. That's what's really starting to become increasingly important and evident.
So do you think this is a baby step closer to finding a cure for Parkinson's disease?
Well, as I said, this is part of the clue that if it doesn't, in fact, start in the gut, which might be a possibility, then it might be one of the closest things to prevent the development of early symptoms. But it's certainly baby steps, as you say. This is the very, very early part of this. We first want to characterize what's different in the flora of the gut in people with Parkinson's compared to those who don't have it.
So, Dr. McKeown, is there anything else you can tell us about how some of the symptoms are treated? Is it medication? I know that you've touched a little bit on possible diet, fitness. Is there? Where are we with treatment of the symptoms of Parkinson's?
Well, we're fortunate that there are many, many treatments available. They can really be divided into broad categories. There's pharmacotherapy, which are medications that we use for people, and there's a number of them that have been available. The most common one is called levodopa, and we're now actually up to the 50-year anniversary of using this medication. So we're very familiar with its pros and its potential side effects. Surgical treatment can sometimes be very effective for people. There's a procedure known as deep brain stimulation, and it can be effective to the particular individuals who meet the criteria. And then there's other things like exercise, as you alluded to. So exercise appears to be very important. And also there are other issues that come up. So, for example, there can be changes related to mood and cognition that also need to be addressed independently.
I'm going to ask you about medical marijuana because it's been a big issue in social media of late. Have there been studies that might indicate this helps as part of a treatment?
Well, I think it's early days yet for medical marijuana. The American Academy of Neurology has not endorsed it as of yet, but again, I think it's early days. There may be some aspects of the disease where it may be beneficial. So, for example, there are people who may experience weight loss. There are people who have anxiety, and the medical marijuana may be helpful for that. Occasionally, as a side effect of some of the medications, people may get involuntary writhing movements that are called dyskinesias, and the marijuana may help that. But there may be some downsides to marijuana. So, for example, one of the concerns about marijuana is that it may worsen apathy, where people just don't feel like doing anything. And that's already a big problem in Parkinson's. And in susceptible individuals, it may trigger psychosis. And so these are things that I think, should not be taken lightly. And I think you have to weigh the pros and cons of all potential therapies, including medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm. There's no slam dunk, is there?
I'm afraid not.
No. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with us today, Dr. McKeown, about where we're at and hope for the future?
Well, I would just like to get back to exercise because it has been promoted strongly by the Parkinson's Society of British Columbia. And we do know that people who are more physically active tend to do better, especially over the long term. What is unclear, though, is exactly what type of exercise is the best, and it may have to be tailored to the individual. So, for example, it's been shown that exercises such as Tai Chi are very good for balance in Parkinson's, but we also know that if you want to sort of promote hormones that stimulate brain growth and brain repair, you have to have aerobic exercise and make sure that you sweat. So that's important. And the other thing I think I would mention is that some of the new technologies, like, for example, we're all familiar with Fitbits where people wear them. So something like that where we can monitor people throughout the day, I think that this will help us keep a closer eye on some of the signs and symptoms throughout the day and help people monitor their symptoms and track their symptoms a little bit better.
Well, Dr. McKeown, thank you so much for your contribution to today's show. I know you've been a great help in helping us understand Parkinson's disease a lot better and where we stand in finding a cure and treating symptoms and the current research that you're doing. Thanks very much for your help.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
You're listening to Boomer Life on CL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. Today we're joined in studio with Parkinson's Society BC's CEO Jean Blake and also in studio Dr. Martin McKeown. You can always get more information about this online at parkinson.bc.ca. Now, you might be surprised to learn that there is a relationship with Parkinson's disease and your gut, your entire digestive system. We're about to find out more about that important connection that the food you eat has with the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. That's all coming up next on Boomer Life on CL 650.
Celebrating the Boomer lifestyle. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. We're back. This is Boomer Life on CL 650.
And welcome back. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. Thanks for joining us today. So far today, we've been having a great conversation on this World Parkinson Day. We're joined in studio with Parkinson's Society BC's CEO, Jean Blake, is here. We've also heard from our resident medical expert, Dr. Martin McKeown, who talked about a gut connection with Parkinson's disease. So joining us on the phone right now, who is going to be our expert in that department and talk about the relationship of the gut with this disease, is Lori Mishley. Lori, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks.
So a little bit about Lori's education. It includes studies in naturopathic medicine, nutritional sciences, and epidemiology. Her work is focused on identifying the nutritional requirements that are unique to individuals with neurodegenerative diseases, just like Parkinson's disease. She's published works on some of the specifics in which we hope to discuss with her today. And we should also mention that Dr. Mishley maintains a small clinical practice at Seattle Integrative Medicine, which is focused on nutrition and neurological health. Did I get all that right?
You absolutely did. Thank you.
Okay, well, great. Well, let's start off with explaining a little bit about the difference between diet and nutrition.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics because it's so often that people use the two synonymously, and they're really different. Your diet is what you put in your mouth. It's what you eat. It's what makes you feel full. And it is very possible to have a diet that has very little nutritional content. So it's easiest to just think of diet as the foods we eat and what makes you feel full, whereas nutrition is the body's getting what it needs from its environment. And while food can be a rich source of nutrients, vitamin D comes from sunlight. Vitamin K comes from the organisms in your gut. So there are a lot of examples of places we get nutrients that don't come from food.
So tell us a little bit more in detail about the study that you're currently doing with Parkinson's and how you're tracking this disease.
Yeah, it's really neat and it's really exciting because what has happened for the last 200 years is we've been doing a lot of studies that tell us that there are certain foods and behaviors that increase or decrease our risk of developing Parkinson's disease. There are five studies right now that say the more dairy somebody eats in midlife, the more likely they are to develop Parkinson's. There are other studies that say the more fish or vegetables you eat, the more green tea and coffee you drink, the less likely you are to develop Parkinson's disease. And so what happens is patients are diagnosed with Parkinson's and they go into their doctor, their neurologist, and they say, hey, should I stop eating dairy? Should I start eating more blueberries and drinking green tea? And the correct response is we don't know. We've never asked. We've never followed people with Parkinson's and asked, does it matter what you eat? Do people who eat X, Y, or Z progress faster or slower than people who eat A, B, and C? And so we set out to do just that. We've created the world's first longitudinal cohort looking to describe the modifiable lifestyle variables associated with different rates of Parkinson's progression. So right now we're following over 1,300 people around the world with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, and every 6 months we survey them and we say, hey, tell us how you're doing, tell us what you're doing, how you're exercising, what you're eating, what supplements you're taking. And we wrote code that tells us who are those people that aren't progressing. They're doing exceptionally well compared to other people. And what are they doing differently? What is the secret to success?
And what have you discovered so far?
Well, we've learned a lot. First of all,
we don't have an hour, unfortunately.
No, we don't. But what we've learned is that the scale that we're using works. We are able to effectively collect these data via internet. So that's the most important thing that we've learned, and that our outcome measure does correlate with quality of life. We've learned that the Mediterranean diet is very protective against Parkinson's disease progression. Very, very straightforward is the connection between consumption of fresh fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, non-fried fish, olive oil, herbs, spices, and wine. So there is a lot of research suggesting that this Mediterranean diet is protective against getting Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. We now know, this is the first data in 200 years that gives us reason to believe that those who adopt a Mediterranean diet will actually have improved outcomes over time.
Well, I think this is fascinating.
After diagnosis.
Sure, after diagnosis. But it is fascinating, mm-hmm. but also in the same sense that, you know, I think some of this might be common sense to some people, but I also think when you've been diagnosed with a disease, whether it be, you know, a type of a cancer or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's in this case, that you're sort of grasping at straws, and it's like, what can I eat, and is there a cure through food, and no one knows who to believe.
No, I've actually had a local neurologist say to me, there is no proof that diet makes a difference, and my patients have already lost so much, I'm not going to take away their cheeseburgers too. And, you know, that's a legitimate point. I disagree with it, but we really need data. We need a reason to be able to look our patients in the eye and ask them to modify their lifestyle. If, you know, it has to be scientifically based.
So in the study that you're doing where you're tracking 1,300 people around the world diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, what else have you found that about foods that are associated with a higher rate of disease progression that makes it worse?
Yeah, that was a big surprise. Iron, both iron supplements and beef consumption are associated with faster rates of progression. And so that wasn't so much of a surprise, but the strength of that association was a little bit surprising. As you might expect, people who consume fried foods and soda, especially diet soda,
sure,
seem to be having worse outcomes over time. And really the biggest surprise to us is the association with canned things, canned fruits, canned vegetables, canned sodas. And so we're really turning our attention in that direction. When we designed the study, we assumed green beans, you know, fresh green beans would be better than frozen would be better than canned, but they would all be good. It was a bit of a surprise for us to see that canned green beans or canned vegetables are actually associated with an accelerated rate of disease progression. So a lot more research needs to be done to figure out what that association is all about.
Sure, the whys and the whens and the whos and all of that. And you mentioned dairy earlier, that dairy has an effect on the progression of Parkinson's.
Yeah, that's actually new data. When we only had 900 people in the data set, there weren't enough people to make that connection evident. Now that we're up to 1,300 people, yogurt, cheese, and milk, and ice cream are all associated with a faster rate of Parkinson's progression.
Fascinating. Now, we've already talked a little bit about the Mediterranean diet, and you made recommendations for that. Large salads, veggies, fresh fruits, nuts, seeds, all of that. Fish was also an important food. Where can somebody get more information on that study and the results or your recommendations?
We are submitting these final set of data for publication this week. So hopefully this summer they will be publicly available and open access. So that's coming as quickly as we can. The paper is under review right now. In terms of just getting started, there are lots of resources about how to adopt a plant-based with fish or Mediterranean-based diet. And those are kind of the guidelines that I would direct people towards. What I advise patients to do is really, instead of making a list of all the things you can't have, oh, I can't have beef, I can't have soda, I can't, really kind of shift your attention towards what you're trying to get more of. How can I get more nuts and seeds in my diet? How can I use, you know, apricots or cashews for snack, a big salad for lunch? How can I have lox for breakfast more often? And just find ways to split more seafood, vegetables, nuts, seeds into your diet each time you're hungry. Make it more about what you want to get more of, not about what you can't have.
Focusing on the positive. Now, quickly, I wanted you to also talk a little bit about the importance of social connection as a medical treatment for Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, that also was a really big surprise in our data. We've known for a long time that loneliness is a problem, and Parkinson's disease often leads to a sense of isolation. It's more difficult to get out. Sometimes speech makes it a little harder to contribute to a conversation. And so one of the side effects of the symptoms of this disease are that people withdraw a little bit. And there's a huge field of research suggesting that, you know, loneliness and isolation are not good for anybody with any condition. And so we added some information about this into our survey. And it turns out that, you know, we have a true-false section of our study. And one of the true-false question statements says, I am lonely. And of every single variable that we're looking at, I think, 800 different variables, people who say, I am lonely, have the fastest rate of Parkinson's disease progression. And the other really interesting thing about that is we also have a true-false statement that says, I have a lot of friends. And there are people, a notable number of people, who have a lot of friends but still feel lonely. And so I've really, since looking at these data, I've had a new spin on how I approach patients and practice. And where I used to tell people support groups were coping tools, I now have reframed that even for myself, and I think of support groups and community involvement as a part of the medicine.
I think it's all fantastic. We also had a comment from Dr. Martin McKeown about how apathy can be a side effect of someone with Parkinson's disease, and that comes as a result of the lack of dopamine that's produced. And I think it's all connected some way, and I really wish, Lori Mischley, that we could speak to you for about an hour on this topic. I thank you so much for your contributions, and thank you for all the research that you've done, and the best of luck in the future of the research with this the 1,300 people that you're following with Parkinson's disease. It sounds great, and I can't wait to hear more from you.
Well, thank you for the invitation to participate in this, and I look forward to giving you updates as we learn more, as the study grows and continues.
Definitely. We'll stay in touch. That was Dr. Lori Mischley on the phone from Seattle. And we wanted to wrap up today's show with Parkinson's Society CEO Jean Blake. And Jean, can you just remind us where people can get more information on Parkinson's disease?
Definitely. So parkinson.bc.ca is our website. And there's also a 1-800 number, 668-3330. And just a segue from Dr. Mischley's, we did actually videotape her presentation at our regional conference in Victoria, and that is on our website if people want to listen to that one-hour presentation and get more information.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you also have a big walk and a fundraiser coming up in September.
We do. It's our biggest annual fundraiser. It's our Parkinson's Super Walk, and it will be happening this year on September 9th and 10th. There are over 20 communities across the province, and we just ask people to get involved and help us raise more awareness as well as funds. We also have a provincial conference happening June 3rd, and that's another place where people could learn more about the disease and coping with it. They just need to go to our website to find more information. It will be held in Richmond at the Sheraton Conference Center.
Perfect. Jean Blake, thank you very much for your contributions today. CEO of the Parkinson Society of British Columbia. Thank you to all of our guests, Richard Miede from Vancouver and from the Board of Directors on the Parkinson BC Society. Richard spoke at great length of what it's like to actually live with the disease. We had Dr. Lori Mischley, who contributed details of the progress on a great study completed on identifying gut reactions and their connections to Parkinson disease. And Dr. Martin McKeown, our expert from the Pacific Parkinson Research Center out at UBC. April is Parkinson's Disease Awareness Month, and today marks World Parkinson Day. Thanks for your contribution, and time to educate yourself. Have a conversation about it. This is Boomer Life on CL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. Thanks for joining us today.